Notre Dame Cathedral is one of the seven wonders of Paris. It sits on the Île de la Cité in the middle of the Seine River. If you take the Pont Neuf Bridge over the island, you can't miss an equestrian statue of 15th century French King Henry IV. The secret history of the place is harder to see. Look to the west and you'll see a cozy triangular park incongruously named the Square du Vert Galant. It's popular on summer nights. It wasn't always. Before the Pont Neuf was constructed, the square was actually part of a small, separate island called the Île aux Juifs, which had a mournful reputation. In March 1314, this was the execution site of Jacques de Molay, the last Grand Master of the Knights Templar. A military monastic order founded two centuries earlier during the Crusades. De Molay and three of his lieutenants were condemned by King Philip IV of France to burn at the stake as unrepentant heretics. The bonfire was no raging inferno. The four were slowly roasted to death in expectation that they would recant, but they didn't. De Molay, in his dying breath, cursed both the king and the pope, vowing that they would join him in death before year's end. And so they did. When the fire at last burned out and the bodies had been reduced to charred bone and ash, some from the crowd came forward to claim the grisly relics. They weren't treated as the bones of heretics, but rather as the bones of martyrs or sorcerers. The legend of the Templars was born. In the 700 years since, the Knights Templar have become the subject of so much rumor, speculation, and outright fantasy that it's almost impossible to separate fact from fiction. Were they genuine Christians? Or secret devil worshippers? Or were they secret Muslims? Or allies of a heretical Islamic sect known as the Assassins? Or were the Templars somehow connected to Jewish mystics known as Kabbalists? Or alchemists? Or guardians of a holy bloodline reaching back to Jesus and Mary Magdalene? Did they possess the Holy Grail, the Ark of the Covenant, the Shroud of Turin? Did the order survive de Molay's death and mutate into the Freemasons and the Rosicrucians? Did they preserve a vast treasure hidden in Scotland or buried in the wilds of North America? Did they use that treasure to wage a secret centuries-long war against the papacy and the French crown? Let's take a look. The Templars originally appeared in Jerusalem after the First Crusade as a small group of knights who protected the Christian pilgrims. And by small, I mean nine men, including their leader and the order's first grandmaster, Hugh de Payen. Officially, they were the poor fellow soldiers of Christ and the Temple of Solomon. The temple entered the picture when Crusader King of Jerusalem, Baldwin II, granted them quarters atop the Temple Mount. Beneath it were the ruins of Solomon's temple. In the years following, the Templars did lots of digging around the mount. Whether they were searching for the Grail, the Ark, or Aladdin's lamp, or just excavating underground storage, is another unanswerable question. Somehow, the Templars quickly acquired patronage, wealth, and influence. And that fuels speculation that a hidden hand promoted and protected them. By 1122, the order had the means to start buying properties in the Holy Land. 5 years later, they expanded to Europe. Things really took off in 1129 when the church granted the order official recognition. Among those expressing support was Bernard of Clairvaux, the big cheese of Catholic monasticism. He drafted the Templars' original rules. 10 years later, Pope Innocent II issued the Omne Datum Optimum decree, which made the Templars answerable to the Pope alone. Recruits poured in. The original nine knights expanded to at least 300. But the image of thousands of knights galloping into battle in flowing white cloaks adorned with the red Templar cross is pure fantasy. At its peak, The Templar Order consisted of 15 to 20,000 brothers of one sort or another. But at most, only a few thousand were knight brothers, and they were the only ones to take monastic vows and wear the trademark white cloaks. The knight brothers were the order's inner society. Their special status was enhanced by the fact that they were all ordained knights before taking holy vows. Most were noblemen, often from important families. Below them was a larger body of sergeant brothers, mostly commoners, who wore black cloaks and didn't take full vows. The sergeants handled most business of the order. While some fought, most were estate managers, notaries, and bureaucrats. Next were the associate brothers, or confrères, basically noble laymen who volunteered to fight with the Templars, usually temporarily. But they were not true initiates. Finally, there were the squires, who also sometimes fought, but mostly served as valets, grooms, and cooks for the knights. In addition, there was a small army of craftsmen, servants, and dependents. Among them were mason brothers, that is, laymen organized to build and maintain the Templars' buildings, castles, and cathedrals. Some claim the Mason brothers were the nucleus of a future fraternal order, the Freemasons. In essence, Templars served as the shock troops of Crusader armies, fighting in almost every battle and siege. But their real power lay on the business end. They came to acquire some 9,000 properties or preceptories organized into 14 provinces, stretching from England to Syria, from Portugal to Poland. And the Templars organized one of the first international banks. It was cumbersome and dangerous to haul bags of gold and silver back and forth to the Holy Land. The Templars let you deposit your money at any of their offices and issued you a letter of credit redeemable at any of their other locations. All for a modest fee, of course. And if you were short of cash, well, they loaned you some for additional fees and collateral. Thus, the poor knights became rich. The Templar kingdom, if it were a state, would have been one of the largest and wealthiest in Christendom. Of course, this notoriety and conspicuous wealth raises the question of how the Templars can be called a secret society. But remember, most secret societies don't conceal their existence. And visibility isn't transparency. Secrecy is on the inside. Take Templar banking. It was one thing for someone to turn up in Jerusalem with a letter of credit, and another to prove that this was the person the letter had been issued to. The Templar solution was encryption. A coded question or password was attached to or embedded in the letter, which only the real bearer could answer. Your bank likely uses something similar. The same methods used to hide business secrets could also hide other things. One of the accusations against the knights was secrecy of proceedings, especially initiation rituals that were conducted indoors at night with no outsiders present. Wizards and witches were also believed to conduct secret nocturnal rituals. Another concern about the knights was that they seemed to be far too familiar with the heretical ideas of their supposed Muslim enemies and might have become secret converts to Islam. In the East, the Templars lived in close proximity to Muslims, and to two sects in particular, the Assassins and the Druze, who were regarded as heretics by more Orthodox Muslims. The Assassins and Druze were ostensibly factions of Shia Islam. Unlike majority Sunni Muslims, Shia believed that the Prophet Muhammad's cousin and son-in-law, Ali, was Muhammad's true successor, and they believed that Ali's progeny were heirs to a holy bloodline. The Sunnis, in comparison, believed that Muhammad's successor should be chosen by consensus. the Templars and Assassins observed a truce as early as 1129. That became an alliance when Assassins and Templars marched together in an effort to capture Damascus. The Assassins also paid an annual tribute to the Templars to preserve the peace. However, one scholar of Islamic mysticism, the late Idris Shah, claimed that the tribute was really a subsidy. He argued that the Templars were a Christianized copy of the original Assassin order. Regardless, the Templars might have used the Assassins to get rid of Muslim and Christian opponents alike. For thousands of years, innumerable and sometimes unnameable religions, cults, and mysteries washed over one another. The so-called Holy Land was home to much older beliefs and practices than Christianity and Islam. Judaism, for one. And Judaism had its own schisms, sects, and heresies. Its esoteric branch was Kabbalah, which is still around today. Very roughly, Kabbalah believes that there is a deeper mystical truth beneath the literal word of the Torah. And Christian mystics used Kabbalah to find hidden meaning in the Bible. The 19th century French occultist Eliphas Levi was convinced the Templars had been initiated into the mysterious doctrines of the Kabbalah. Yet another sect was the Gnostic Mandaeans, who believed that John the Baptist, not Jesus, was the true prophet and son of God. They also get roped into the Templar mythos. Mystical doctrine aside, the wealth and power of the Templars was enough to make any king envious, and it did. The knight's nemesis was King Philip IV of France, who was known as Philip the Fair, though not for his sense of fair play. Dante later dubbed him the Plague of France. In the modern day, he would have made an excellent mob boss. Having bankrupted France in fruitless wars, Philip looked around for other sources of money. One of his first targets was the Catholic Church. And when Pope Boniface VIII dared excommunicate him, Philip had the old man kidnapped and beaten so badly that he soon died. Boniface's successor, Benedict XI, was promptly poisoned by Philip's henchmen. Philip then put his own man, Clement V, on the papal throne in 1305. And for good measure, he moved the papacy from Rome to the French city of Avignon. The following year, Philip turned on the Jews. In a kind of dress rehearsal for his coming attack on the Templars, Philip arranged the mass arrest of all of the kingdom's Jews on a single day. He then confiscated their money and property and kicked them out of France. Any who resisted were put to death. In fact, that's how Demolay's execution site, the Île aux Juifs, or Isle of the Jews, got its name. In 1307, Philip finally turned his attention to the Templars. While still rich, the order was already in decline, and the Crusader states had fallen. In 1303, the Templars lost their last foothold in the Holy Land. Jacques de Molay, the last Grand Master, moved the order's headquarters to Paris, where he hoped to rally support for a new crusade. The order's numbers had dwindled to less than 10,000, with maybe 1,000 knights proper. Maybe 2,000 to 3,000 Templars of all kinds were in France. De Molay seems to have suspected nothing. The day before his arrest, he was a pallbearer at the funeral of King Philip's sister-in-law. Philip doubtless invited him to make sure that De Molay would be easy to catch. In September 1307, Philip sent orders to his officials throughout the kingdom. They weren't to be opened until October 12th. The order decreed that on Friday, October 13th, all Templars were to be arrested and their property seized. And that, supposedly, is how Friday the 13th earned its reputation for bad luck. Of course, luck had nothing to do with the Templars' downfall. It was a carefully calculated conspiracy. The way the story is commonly told, Philip, with the backing of the Pope, tortured the imprisoned knights to extract confessions of heresy and other heinous acts, and then burned them all at the stake. The Templars ceased to exist. But the story was much more complicated and less conclusive than that. First, Remember the decree that exempted the Templars from all but the Pope's authority? Well, Philip's arrest violated it. Even the tame Pope Clement was outraged. Beyond that, the arrest order covered only lands under the jurisdiction of the French crown, and that included only part of France. The initial roundup bagged around 500 Templar brothers of all types. But confessions were taken from only 138, and just 4 confessed. The rest escaped or were released. Torture was legal in French judicial proceedings and was used aggressively on the captive Templars. Demolay broke after 2 days of brutal interrogation. At least 30 more knights admitted guilt of some kind. But what did they confess to? The basic charges against the Templars were that they engaged in blasphemy by spitting on the cross and cursing the names of Jesus and Mary. They were also accused of engaging in unusual sexual practices, i.e. homosexuality, refusing to celebrate Mass or other sacraments, practicing secrecy, and worshiping a false idol. But there was little consistency in the confessions, which were sometimes obtained through torture, and sometimes not. The supposed idol, called Baphomet, was variously described as a human head, but occasionally as a cat. Some claimed it was a bearded man or a woman. Others said it had 2 faces or 3. It might be made of gold or of wood or of glass. Regardless, the idol supposedly had the power to grant protection, make land fertile, trees grow, and find and guard riches. Some argue that this is what Philip was really after. If so, he didn't find it either. Theories about what Baphomet was, or might have been, continue to the present day. Google Baphomet, and you're bound to find the image of the eerie goat god figure commonly identified with the devil. Yet that image is the 19th century invention of occultist Eliphas Levi. It bears no resemblance to anything described by a Templar. However, it is embraced by modern Satanists as an image of their deity. Another common assumption is that Baphomet was a corruption of Muhammad, and further evidence that the Templars had gone Muslim. But this doesn't hold up either. Islam strictly forbids idols, especially any image depicting the Prophet. Magic heads, however, were a common feature in Near Eastern mysticism, and it's easy to imagine the Templars running across them. Some even see Baphomet as a representation of the Gnostic or Kabbalistic Sophia, the feminine embodiment of wisdom. Using something called the Atbash cipher, an encrypted Hebrew alphabet, Baphomet can indeed be made to render Sophia. Or that's what they claim to see. However, English occultist Aleister Crowley maintained that Baphomet was a corruption of a Greek term meaning baptism of wisdom. Muslim mystic Idris Shah suspected that Baphomet was the same magical head revered by Muslim Sufis as Halaja. Yet others think it's the Kabbalistic symbol for a mystical figure called Longface. Other theories include the head of the Masonic martyr Hiram Abiff, the face on the Shroud of Turin, the heads of Jesus or Mary or John the Baptist. In other words, just about anything you could imagine. In the summer of 1308, Pope Clement finally screwed up the courage to intervene. He interviewed dozens of the arrested Templars, including Demolay. Most admitted to errors, but offered plausible explanations. Spitting or cursing at the cross, they claimed, was a test to demonstrate loyalty to superiors by doing as commanded, or to prepare for possible capture by the Islamic Saracens who would press them to renounce their faith. By convincingly, but insincerely insulting Christ, they saved themselves, but committed no sin. Interestingly, this is basically identical to the assassin's practice of Taqiyya, which permitted denying and even insulting one's faith when circumstances demanded. In the end, only 3 Templars admitted to homosexual acts, and only a handful recalled any idol at all. Pope Clement concluded that while the order was guilty of irregular practices, they weren't heretics. A document discovered in 2001 in the Vatican archives, the so-called Chinon parchment, shows that Clement absolved the knights, including de Mélet, and didn't support the order's dissolution. But Philip wasn't going to stop, pope or no pope. The French proceedings dragged on for years. In 1310, 54 Templars were found guilty of blasphemy and heresy and burned at the stake. De Mélet and his lieutenants were kept alive, probably because Philip thought they'd cave and reveal their treasure's location. In 1312, Pope Clement gave in and ordered the Knights Templar formally disbanded. Philip next tried to pressure a public confession from de Mélet, even though the Grand Master and the others had been absolved. De Mélet sealed his fate, perhaps deliberately, by turning the tables on the king and publicly recanting his old confession. And so, the slow, simmering bonfire on the Île aux Juifs. Now, while the order was dismantled in France, most of its members survived. Outside France, things were very different. Prosecutions were mostly symbolic and resulted in acquittal more often than not. In Scotland, only a few knights stood trial, 3 in Germany, 14 in Ireland. In Spain and Portugal, local monarchs protected the order by simply changing its name. In Portugal, the Templars became the Order of Christ, and in Aragon, the Order of Montesa. So the Templar order was never really destroyed, and they had ample reason to carry a grudge against the French crown and the church. But did the knights really launch a conspiracy that would lead to the French Revolution? And what about that treasure? If Philip the Fair didn't get it, who did? Maybe the real secret was that the Templars didn't have one. Maybe they were as insolvent as Philip. However, other stories, always the stories, maintain that de Mélet ordered the treasure spirited away to the port of La Rochelle on the French Atlantic coast, and from there to Scotland. The Scots, under Robert the Bruce, were engaged in a desperate war of independence from England from 1307 to 1314. Templar gold and Templar warriors would have been welcome. It seems entirely possible that some knights found sanctuary there. Out of that possibility grows another legend that links the Templars to the Scottish noble family of Sinclair. This allegedly started with Sir William the Crusader Sinclair, who lived from 1283 to 1330. He might have been a crusader, but there's no proof he was ever a Templar. In fact, he actually gave evidence against Templars tried in Scotland. Regardless, the Sinclair legend gave rise to the supposed Templar connection to Scotland's Roslyn Chapel of Da Vinci Code fame. Among other things, the 15th century chapel gets turned into the hiding place of Baphomet or the Templar treasure, a replica of Solomon's Temple, and proof of an early link between the Templars and the Freemasons. But Roslyn Chapel can't be proven to be any of these things. If you come to the conclusion that much about the Knights Templar is in the eye of the beholder, you're absolutely right. The alleged Sinclair Templar connections reach all the way across the Atlantic to Nova Scotia and New England, where Templar brothers are supposed to have established footholds nearly 100 years before Columbus. Some even believe there are ruins of a Templar fort near New Ross. Templar references are a recurring theme in the History Channel series, The Curse of Oak Island. For the uninitiated, the show revolves around efforts to solve the mystery of the so-called Money Pit near Lunenburg, Nova Scotia. Somebody certainly went to a lot of trouble to dig shafts and build underground structures on the little island, presumably to conceal something of value. So, some speculate, it could be the final resting place of the fabled Templar treasure, or their archives, or the Holy Grail, or maybe the head of Baphomet, or it's all somebody's idea of an elaborate hoax. The Nova Scotia story mostly rests on something called the Zeno narrative. It supposedly recounts the adventures of 2 Venetian mariners, Niccolo and Antonio Zeno, who around 1398 navigated the ships of a North Atlantic warlord named Zikmini on a voyage that took them to Iceland, Greenland, and ended up somewhere in the New World. Zikmini, it's assumed, is a garbled version of Sinclair, specifically the warlord Sir Henry Sinclair, descendant of the alleged Templar Crusader Sinclair. And how did Zikmini know where America was? Well, from maps or charts unearthed by the Templars in the Temple Mount. How else? Now, if you can get Sinclair out of Zikmini, I guess it all makes a certain amount of sense. But there are other issues with the story. First, the Zeno narrative wasn't discovered until 1558 by one of the brothers' descendants. Some suspect he invented the whole thing to make his ancestors look more important than that other Italian, Columbus. Then there's the issue of Zikmini being the ruler of an island called Frislandia, which doesn't exist. The accompanying map that supposedly indicates Nova Scotia does no such thing. Nova Scotia didn't even get its name until the 17th century, and no one made any connection between Zikmini and Sinclair until the late 18th century. And let's not forget that there's no real evidence that the Sinclairs had any connection to the Templars in the first place. In New England, others see traces of the Templars in the mysterious Old Stone Mill near Newport, Rhode Island. Similar theories are spun about the inscriptions on Dighton Rock, just a few miles away. A French Freemason, Antoine Court de Gebelin, claimed to see Masonic symbols inscribed on the stone. Others insist the inscriptions are the handiwork of the Portuguese Order of Christ, which, of course, was the Knights Templar renamed. Over the past seven centuries, many groups have claimed to be the heirs or resurrection of the Knights Templar, probably the best known of the Freemasons. By the 1700s, it was widely accepted in Masonic circles, and still is, that a Templar connection existed. Another secret society that supposed Templar roots was the Rosicrucians. In 1804, a society called the Ordre du Temple, the Order of the Temple, appeared in France. It claimed to be nothing less than the original Templars restored. The order was headed by an ex-Catholic priest named Bernard Raymond Fabre Palaprat, who claimed to be Grand Master in an unbroken secret line instituted by Demelet just before his death. A few years later, Palaprat spun off something called the Johannite Church of Primitive Christians. The Johannite Church was based on another of the former priest's supposed discoveries, a variant of the Gospel of John. This gospel turned Jesus into an initiate of the ancient mysteries of Egypt and Greece. Jesus supposedly imparted these secrets to his beloved disciple John, aka John the Revelator. To guard them, John then formed a secret church separate from mainstream Christianity. As the story goes, the Templars' founder, Hugh de Payen, was initiated into the church in 1118. But in this version, Christ, while an initiate and a prophet, was not necessarily divine or resurrected. Also, his successor wasn't Saint Peter, founder of the papacy, but John. Basically, it's a Christian version of the dispute over Muhammad's succession with John in the place of Ali. This might explain some of the Templars' irregular practices and maybe even their connection to the assassins. Of course, we have only ex-priest Palaprat's word for it. A 20th century self-proclaimed expert on secret societies named Nesta Helen Webster echoed some of this by claiming that the Templars imported a secret doctrine from the East capable of a Christian or anti-Christian interpretation. So too, 19th century French Freemason Jean-Marie Ragon, who thought the Templars renounced the religion of St. Peter and adopted a certain Judaic doctrine, he attributed to St. John the Apostle. Of course, Ragon was also a member of Palaprat's Order of the Temple. Others argued that the Knights were devotees of a different John, John the Baptist, and saw him, not Jesus, as the Son of God and a true prophet. Could that explain Baphomet? Was it the preserved head of the Baptist, revered as a holy of holies? Who knows? Stripped of the lies, myths, and theories, there's just not a lot of there where the Templars are concerned. It's probably what makes them such an object of fascination. You can see almost anything in them. They came into existence, were visible for a time, and then disappeared. Or became something else. Still, does any of this explain why? When French King Louis XVI's severed head rolled from the guillotine in 1793, an unknown man supposedly shouted, "Jacques de Mélay, you are avenged!"